Punishment is an interesting concept.
Just kidding.
There's different ways of looking at punishment. One thing, you can look at punishment as a consequence of what you do. And so people that don't show up miss out on a certain amount of knowledge. And that is in form of a punishment. It's not a punishment, it's a consequence. And you can look at all kinds of punishments from heaven in that fashion. When you do something, there is a consequence to your action. And it's not a punishment as we define punishment, but rather it is a direct consequence that sometimes helps you refocus on what you need to do. Anyway, in this parak we talk about Asniel. Now, we mentioned that in Divrei Hayamim, there's a book at the end. It's a book of Ksuvim. Tanakh is Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. The parts that have a different style. Now, the Ksuvim is written about the time that they come back after the destruction of the Second Temple. And it has in it a history of events that happened that parallels the Navi. And we have different emphasis, different statements, different kinds of things. In Shoftim, we don't have that many differences. In Malachim, there are major differences. And the emphasis becomes different. But if you look in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud, that's roughly in this book, page 1880. If the books are the same, and this is just a bigger book for people who can't see well, you see that Asniel is referred to as Yabetz. And there are times in Divrei Hayamim that Asniel is referred to as Asniel also. The question is, why do we use different names? And the answer is in Chumash and in Navi. The names aren't really that important. What is important is something about that person. So there are people, for example, Moshe had many names. Our choice of the name Moshe to refer to him is to indicate what?
To give credit to Paro's daughter
to that she saved him, to indicate that he could have been something else. There's a medrash that says there was a king that at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim heard about all this and wanted to see who Moshe was. So he sent a photographer, but the photographer equipment wasn't so good. They had to paint a picture. He sent two people to paint a picture of Moshe. One comes back with a picture of this very righteous looking fellow. And one comes back with this picture of this very evil looking fellow. So the king was very upset. And he says, one of you is in trouble. And so he goes himself and asks to Moshe, and he goes and asks. And Moshe says, no, they're both correct. I could have been this person. I could have been this person that had all kinds of evilness. But I was pulled out. I was taken out. I became this great person. And that's an important lesson in the name of Moshe. We see that Yisro, Kenaz, has different names. Each represent a different aspect of his life. The name that we refer to his children by has to do with acquiring, with a Kenyan, that they moved in and they acquired a Kenyan. Yabetz and Asniel has to do with
that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered his prayer, and his prayer was to teach. And Yabetz means that he taught Torah. And we'll see that he goes to the south, to the desert. Has anybody ever been at the Dead Sea? Has anybody ever been in Arad? That's a little bit past the Dead Sea. So Yabetz is going to be going down to that area to teach. We see in the Pasuk Yodalad, we see a story about Asniel that is not, again, easily understood.
I'm sorry, Rabbi Yodalad of what?
Of the Shoftim Aleph, Perek Aleph. We jumped back. We're not good at transitions. We let you turn your pages. Asniel has been married off to Kalev's daughter. Kalev has made a promise, and it worked out. And now he's given this land, he's given a field in addition to the field that he inherits. Inheritance of the land of Israel works through a complicated system. But in the conditional inheritance, Kalev receives a special portion, and Yoshua receives a special portion that do not count. The portion that Kalev gets does not necessarily follow the standard laws of inheritance. Basically, land. Again, the Chumash addresses the question of inequality of wealth. How do we address the question of inequality of wealth? How do we try to preserve equal chance in terms of wealth? And the Chumash says the land is given and it follows laws of inheritance. You can sell it for up to 50 years and then it reverts with some qualifications. One of the qualifications is the land that was given to the Kalev and the land that was given to Yeshua does not have to follow the same laws of inheritance. That is, they can give it permanently to somebody else. And that is what Kalev does. He gives, his daughter comes and asks for, she was given a field by Kalev, and she asks for water and additional things, and as she is granted that, the question is, why is this story here? Why does this story Yudalad? I think it's Yudalad. Yeah, Yudalad. The two psukim that are in Yudalad too, the two psukim. Deal with this request by Kalev's daughter and his giving her the granting of the land and the water and the well, the water to irrigate it. Why is this in the Navi? Nobody has a guess this morning? The reason is that it has to do with a parallel to learning Torah, and they go through and they, Mefarshim, talk about this, and that's why Yavetz and Asniel, the names, the two names, become so important, and that he goes down and lives on your map, as you can see, south of in the south, almost on the bottom. It's the last real name of the city. That's Arad, which is in the bottom of the desert. Tes Zayin has another interjection, and that's B'nai Kenani. B'nai Keni, Chosei Moshe. Keni is Yisro, is referred to in the Chumash as Yisro. Keni, as we said, because he acquired the Torah. He gave up his worldly things and acquired his Torah. This says that they went down and they joined Asniel in Arad to learn. Now, it also says that they were living in Yericho. Jericho, Jericho was a city that was destroyed. And there is a mitzvah not to rebuild Jericho. We will see later on in Malachim, a lot later, in Malachim that there is a curse that says whoever rebuilds the city of Jericho, when he starts building it, his oldest son will die. When he finishes, his youngest son will die. And that's what happens. So here when they say they live in a city of Tamarim, which is Jericho, it has to be understood as living in the suburbs of Jericho, outside of the main city. You can't go to Jericho now, but in Jericho, in Jericho, it's in the Palestinian Authority, and you cannot go there. But we could go there, or we used to be able to go there. And you can see that there are different parts of the area. There's one part that they think is the old Jericho, the old city, which is destroyed and has never been rebuilt. You have there an old shul, where they rebuilt from this time of that the person whose children did die when he rebuilt. There's a shul from that period. It's a shul that's about 2,700 years old.
Is it still there, or did the Palestinians destroy it yet?
The mosaic, the floor, is still there. Or was there. I believe it's still there. Again, it is part of the continual battle that goes on. The Palestinians do destroy many things. They did major work on the Temple Mount, and they destroyed many, many artifacts because that would identify that as being Jewish. And yes, they do have that general trend. But it's not easy to destroy. What they usually do is they will say this is a Palestinian mosque that was built in a different style. That was the general kind of approach. Alright. In Pasuk Yud Ches, we're going to look at the map. If we look at the map, we see that it's talking about the area that we call Gaza, and it's called Gaza here, or Gaza, and includes the cities of Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gat, Eglon. If you look on the bottom left-hand corner of your map, you'll see these cities. These are the cities that we're talking about. This is the area that we're talking about. In the time of the Shoftim, parts of this were not, much of this was not part of Israel. Much of this is part of Israel. Those areas were incompletely captured. They were captured, but incompletely.
It's a machlokas.
If you interject the question, there's a machlokas. The reason for a machlokas is always because there's different questions of what constitutes Eretz Yisrael. We say that the conquering that Yeshua has, what was considered land, the land of Israel during the time of Yeshua, was Kidsh L'Shaita and not Kodesh L'Asid Lovo. It was Kodesh at that time, but the Kedusha did not continue. That has to do, for example, even with Ir David. If you have gone on the tour, if you go on the tour of Ir David, the city of Jerusalem is not the city that we know. The city of Jerusalem is the city down below where you have the tour. And that was Jerusalem. In the second temple, that was not Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem was where you have, let's say, the Jewish quarter. They have the whole maps, and it extends at different periods of time. Now, if we are, in terms of Jerusalem, there is a question of Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni is the food that has to be eaten in Jerusalem. So when we have food, we take off Meiser, Rishon, Meiser, Sheni, Truma, and all that. We could talk about that. One of the things we take off is Meiser, Sheni. And then we buy it back. And we don't pay very much for it. Because we're hard bargainers and the other guy isn't there. So we buy it. But that's how it works in halacha. That you can pay a pruta, a penny, some amount that is a minimum amount that's worth buying, but it's not what we would really pay for. But that is sufficient to redeem the Meiser. But you can only redeem Meiser Sheni. You can only buy Meiser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Inside Yerushalayim, you cannot redeem Meiser Sheni. So if you're in the walls of the old city, there is a problem now with Meiser Sheni. If you buy something and it's not been, you go out and you pick some grapes or something, and you bring it into Yerushalayim, there is a problem if you're in the old walled city. If you go down to Ir David, down below, it's not a problem because that's not considered Yerushalayim in terms of the current halacha. So, the border up here was part of Israel during the time of the Shoftim. We'll see that parts of the time it was extended down. During the time of David, it was extended up and extended down. And the question, and during the second period, it was not included in the same area. Jordan has the same kind of problem. So that there are people that say, during Shemitah, or Meiser Sheni, or a Meiser, or whatever it is, that if you are in a lot, you do have to take Meiser, and some people say you don't have to take Meiser. So there is a question about it, and that has to do with that border issue. Anyway, so Aza was a problem, and it remains a problem. So those are the cities of Aza, the Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gat, Eglon, and Lachish are the five cities that are that constitute Aza. We'll see later on in the period of Eli, they again have come to a forefront of a problem. In Pasuk Yud Tes, it says, Vahi Hashem es Yehuda. And Hashem was with Yehuda. Vayoresh es Ahar. They inherited the mountains. They captured the mountains. But it goes on, Kilorish es Yoshvei Emek, because they did not inherit the valleys, because they had chariots. Now, what is the problem with that? In general, what is easier to capture, the mountains or the valleys? Why?
Because they can see high, they can defend themselves.
They can defend themselves and they can see. For example, to illustrate that, we didn't make too much progress today. To illustrate that, if you look out your window, or my window, or the window, what do you see?
Mountains
and trees and history, if you know what you're looking at.
Shoftim.
No. We don't go that far back because we aren't that good. You have to go down to the Super Saw to see history. No, that's true. If you go down by the Super Saw, you can see. No, I mean Yesh. Not Yesh. Yeah, it's Yesh now. Yesh. Down below. But there are things in the That's a different thing. Anyway, the top mountain outside is called the castle. And that's like the... You went there. And that's the like a castle. And the reason it's called that is because the Arabs used to sit up there and they controlled the whole area. And you saw how they were able to attack any convoys that would come up through the lowlands. That mountain controls the area. Alright? The next mountain over was how they got past that. They came up through the next mountain and they brought up the supplies, and they're able to then control it and defend against the Arabs. So why in this pasuk were they able to control the mountains but not control the valleys? Because Hashem was with them. And that the point is that that was a clear sign to them if they thought. And if they continue to think. But as we see in the current newspapers, that's very difficult to do. And it's very difficult to do for them. You know, after the Six-Day War, does everybody know what the Six-Day War is? What year was the Six-Day War in? 67. There were people, they captured the Har HaBayis, they captured the Temple Mount. And they all said these were non-religious generals that organized and fought, and the whole process of that fighting said, this is miraculous. They knew what they were capable of. They saw what they did, and they saw that they won because of a miracle. It wasn't that they were so good, and they recognized that for one day. They recognized it, they made the statement, and the next day they then proceeded to do lots of things that we still have to deal with now. But that ability to keep that in mind is not easy. And that's what happens here. They capture the mountains, but they don't capture the valleys, which militarily doesn't work, unless we say that it's Hashem. All right, we'll try to finish tomorrow the part. We have to go through the map. We have to see how the Navi now proceeds from Yehuda. It goes up and goes up towards the top. It goes through the central part, which is Benjamin, which is Yehuda, is next to Yehuda and has partly controls Yerushalayim. The temple is on Benjamin and Yehuda's land. The border of Benjamin and Yehuda, one of the borders is where? Anybody who's been on a bus in Yerushalayim should be able to see where the border is. You go past it if you take the bus out of Har Nof most times. Confei? You go past. No, Confei not. It's not. Confei is not. It's part of straight part of Yehuda. When you come down out of Givat Shaul and you come down to the Tel Aviv-Jerusalem highway, if you look across the way, there's a valley. And that valley is the border. Ramot is in Benjamin. Okay? But it goes up. Ramot goes up. You have above it Ephraim and Manasseh, and that defines... We'll see that that was where the Mishkan was and the seat of the government of the 10 tribes. We go up to the other tribes. On the coast, we'll see that we have Asher, we have Zvon, and we have in Tel Aviv an anomaly. Tel Aviv has always been an anomaly. What's the bus company in Tel Aviv called? What?
Don.
Why is it called Don?
Shevet Don.
Because, and the area is called Gush Don. Okay?
So where are we called again?
It's just like you have a bus company or something called Mate Binyamin. These names were taken from some of the historical names. But Gush Don is an anomaly, because if we look at our map, on the top, we see Don. So we have to understand why it's here and there. But we'll go through and we'll see some of those things tomorrow. You had a question?
Yeah, so why are we called Eged?
Not everything was taken. Eged is because of Aguda. It's an acronym because of an organization. And originally the way Eged got started was that there were a group of people that had a vehicle, and they didn't have any company. So they formed a co-op. And that was the Aguda that became to be Eged. And that was all the different drivers got together. And it's still partly the structure of Eged. That's why they're called Eged, not because there was some guide Eged. Actually, his name was Egghead, but...